demolished the flight of...
This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Do want to alert you, as always on a Sunday, it is an NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. You can come down and watch all the football action, all the racing action as well. Wear a jersey, you get in for free. Put your name on a square. Maybe you can win a jersey or a food voucher. But again, throughout the season, all the football games and all the racing action available here every Sunday. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. That's also the location for tomorrow's match bet promotion. It's Veterans Day, Monday holiday, so some of the venues we'll be running that aren't normally on Mondays. We'll also have an OTB Live here on the network tomorrow afternoon. I'll be in, but there is a match bet promotion going at the clubhouse tomorrow, Veterans Day, where we get a chance to salute the folks in the armed services on the holiday. You can swing on down. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Don't forget, 3% bonus on your Churchill wagers continues today. If you wager through your Capital OTB bet account and you're a member of the Player Rewards, there are some restrictions. You can check the website for more. But 3% bonus with your Churchill Downs wagers. And again, mentioned this the last couple of days, but if you're a Phone-A-Bet customer, one of the numbers, the one ending 5111, is now no longer available. So if you've been using that number, make note of these updated numbers for Phone-A-Bet. If you are a Phone-A-Bet customer, 1-800-342-4287 or 518-381-2450. And that'll get you in touch with Phone-A-Bet. You'll be good to go there if you're a Phone-A-Bet customer. And again, if you want to come down for an NFL Sunday, Jets versus Giants today should be a nail biter. If not for the fans in the audience, for the guys that have head coach on their lapels, because they are both struggling a little bit. So maybe it'll wind up being a good game for the two New York teams. Who knows? I'm going to do a little stakes recap from yesterday. Not a lot of stakes action. I think I read the Commonwealth that Churchill was the only graded stakes in North America yesterday, you know, the week after the big week, as it were. So we'll take a look, though. There's some fun stakes, regardless. There was the Frost King up at Woodbine with Ontario Breds, Ontario Sired, Ontario Breds. Maybe you can look for Queen's Plate runners coming out of that. I mean, it was a sprint, but it is the two-year-old season. Three nice stakes in New York that will produce some runners that'll be fun to follow. And again, the Commonwealth at Churchill Downs. So we'll do the stakes recap. Then we'll go into a little bit of handicapping. I think I'm going to take a look at the late pick five at Aqueduct and just kind of go through that sequence during our handicapping segment. And then towards the end of the program, we'll be joined by our friend Tim Wilkin from the Times Union. And again, the week after, as it were, we'll continue with a little Breeders' Cup recap. Tim was up in the press box out at Santa Anita over the weekend, so we'll get some of his impressions overall of what went on out in Southern California last Friday and Saturday. All of that on this edition of Racing Across America. So let's kick in with some of that stakes action. Some of it we watched during OTB Live yesterday. Three nice stakes at Aqueduct. starting with the pumpkin pie. The pumpkin pie was for the ladies going 7 furlongs. Going to watch the stretch run here. It'll be number 6, Saguaro Road, getting up over Philanthropic. Philanthropic, the 1, was the 3-2 favorite. It was Jason Service, Gary and Mary West, coming out of a couple of wins since moving from the Asmussen to the Jason Service barn. And there you see Philanthropic's in the lead, but gets worn down by Saguaro Road. I liked Majestic Reason. That one winds up kind of a disappointing 5th as the second choice at 5-2, the number 7 horse. But had the other two in my mix. Saguaro Road was down at the bottom of my mix, admittedly. This is a horse that, to start the four-year-old season, had put in a couple of nice wins, Keeneland and Belmont, back in April and May. But they were an allowance and optional claiming company. Subsequently had moved into stakes company, down at Gulfstream, tried the Princess Rooney off the 2 wins in the early part of the season, and was a disappointing 6th. Then up at Saratoga, restricted stakes race, ran an okay 2nd. Over to try the Presque Isle Masters, ran 7th. Back to a restricted stake at Laurel, ran 3rd just prior to this one. And then won yesterday at 4-1. So you got $10 and change, which maybe seemed a little light. That was the morning line price. But again, it just seemed like this horse, since moving into stakes company, had struggled a little bit. Now, this was an ungraded stake, and the 2 restricted stakes that the horse had been in had run well. So was playable. I had it down at the bottom of my mix. I just thought some others in here were a little bit more interesting. And again, I was a little disappointed with Majestic Reason, the Grand Motion runner that I thought was interesting coming in out of a 3rd place finish behind Come Dancing in the Gallant Bloom. But that one, again, runs a kind of a poor or a disappointing 5th in the field of the 7. So Saguaro Road gets it done, Philanthropic 2nd. And Pink Sands, another horse that I had in my mix, ran 3rd. That one coming out of a steady string of stakes races for Shug McGahee with some back numbers. But that one, the last 2 were a little bit disappointing. I thought had the potential to maybe wake up, excuse me, and run better with the cutback from 2 turns to 1 turn on Saturday, Pink Sands. And ran 3rd, which was not really a step forward necessarily from what we saw. I thought that was a possibility. Again, I had it down in the 3rd spot, so I didn't have a lot of enthusiasm for Pink Sands. But again, Philanthropic ran decently, but just could not hold off Saguaro Road. This was a nice little effort from that one to kind of finally break through in stakes company and get it done in the pumpkin pie. Again, an ungraded stake. Yesterday at Aqueduct, $100,000 up for grabs. So Saguaro Road gets it done in the pumpkin pie. In the Artie Schiller, these are 3-year-olds and up, going a mile on the grass yesterday at Aqueduct, $150,000 up for grabs. I used Voodoo Song. Voodoo Song's going to be the number 10 horse. And as we come into the lane, kind of took over the lead from the early pace setter. And I thought Voodoo Song, there was a few strides here where I thought, oh, he's gonna gut it out. And then the closers kind of got in gear and swooped on by. Number 8, Caribou Club, I thought was live. But, boy, what a nice ride from Joel Rosario on Curlin's Honor to come up the rail, save the ground, and make that late move and just get it by what chart margin of a neck. Look closer to about half a length, but regardless, either way, over Caribou Club. Again, I thought Voodoo Song would be interesting off of the previous 2 races. The start of the season for Voodoo Song was disappointing up at Saratoga, but the last 2 at Belmont seemed to indicate maybe Voodoo Song had gotten back into some decent form. I thought there may be a challenge early from Dr. Edgar. It instead came from Abiding Star, who kind of went out and dueled a little bit early with Voodoo Song. Voodoo Song then kind of sat back around the turn, went by that one, and as I say, there were 4 or 5 strides in the stretch where I thought, I think Voodoo Song may gut this one out. But as I said, those same 4 or 5 strides were the 4 or 5 strides it took the closers to get into gear. I thought the 2 closers that were interesting were Caribou Club and Frontier Market, and they wind up 2nd and 3rd. Curlin's Honor, I probably should have given a little more credit to Curlin's Honor. This is a horse that had been racing most of this season up at Woodbine for Mark Cassie in some graded stakes up there. Had been very competitive. Tossed in a little win last time up there in an optional claimer that maybe was a confidence builder. Did not have a win. Was going nicely in stakes races up there, but didn't have a win. So maybe Mark Cassie just said, yeah, let's get that confidence builder and then pop down and try the Ari Schiller. But as I say, it was also a very nice ride from Joel Rosario. 10-1 on the morning line, took a few ticks off of that at 7-1 went off, but you got a nice $17.40 for the Cassie runner, who, as I say, was coming off a win, had been very competitive in graded stakes up in Canada, and maybe deserved a little more respect. I mean, the ones I liked, it was one of those where Curlin's Honor probably, or not even probably, clearly you could have gone for and put that one in your mix. The four I used were just, to me, a little more interesting yesterday, but Curlin's Honor did get it done for, as I say, first win of the year, but did get that little confidence booster. Second win of the year, excuse me, did get that confidence boosting win last time. First stakes win of the year yesterday after having run well in stakes previously up at Woodbine. Finally, at Aqueduct on the stakes side, it was the Atlantic Beach for two-year-olds on the turf. And nice full field in here, full field of 12. I thought Freewheeler was going to be interesting coming out of a second-place finish in the Futurity last time behind Four-Wheel Drive. Four-Wheel Drive won a Breeders' Cup race last weekend, so I thought Freewheeler was flattered for Todd Pletcher. Freewheeler is the number five horse here. You'll have to look for the chicklet way back. Freewheeler, 10th in the field of 12. Yikes. Old Chestnut was interesting to me. The two horse and Bolden, the eight horse, one that I wasn't looking at necessarily, was number four, Jack and Noah, who goes out, says, catch me if you can, and they can't. In a bold move from Jose Ortiz, takes them all the way around, and they just really don't get close. Embolden runs second, so that one kind of lived up to what I thought. But as I say, it was a poor performance from Freewheeler. All three of those, Freewheeler, Embolden, and Jack and Noah, came out of that Futurity race behind Four-Wheel Drive. But Freewheeler was second, Embolden was third, Jack and Noah was fourth. So Jack and Noah kind of switches the tables on those others and gets it done. And they were all lately raced. I mean, Freewheeler only two starts, Jack and Noah only two starts, three starts for Embolden. And with only the two starts, both Jack and Noah and Freewheeler had the potential to go either direction, and Jack and Noah went forward, Freewheeler went backward. I can't believe Freewheeler is as bad as we saw, though, given the first couple of starts, a nice win up at Saratoga, and then that good second in the Futurity behind Four-Wheel Drive last time. Now, Freewheeler is a New York bred, so they can regroup and go back into New York State Bred Company and as I say, regroup and try to get back to what we saw in the first two starts, which I think is probably more the talent level that Freewheeler has. Just was not able to show it for whatever reason yesterday. But Jack and Noah, pretty good-looking runner for Mark Cassie and Gary Barber. Now two wins in three career starts, including a nice stakes win. You would have to think this will be a nice little three-year-old turfer to keep our eyes on going forward. European bred, so there was plenty of turf breeding, obviously, for that one as well. So Jack and Noah gets it done in the Atlantic Beach. As noted earlier, I'm pretty sure I read this morning that the Commonwealth was, in fact, the only graded stakes race on the North American racing calendar yesterday, a week after the Breeders' Cup. Again, another nice full field of 11 in here. These are three-year-olds on the turf. A subdivision, you listen to me enough, you know I love this. I think there are nice three-year-old turf races throughout the year, and this demonstrates it. We're now in November, and they're still getting a good full field in a grade three event for the three-year-olds on the turf, and it seems like all year long there are nice races like this. I don't know whether this year was a particularly strong one for this subdivision, but as always, you're getting races like this, nice competitive events, and if you predicted it correctly, you wound up getting paid off. The winner is going to be the number 11, Mr. Dumas, at 9-1, $21.40. The favorite runs second, number 7, Tracksmith. He was 7-2, so a lukewarm favorite. Marquis Prince runs third, the number 5, at 8-1. So again, there was plenty of value to be had here. I used Tiz Plus on top, the number 8 horse, oof, last in the field of 11 at 6-1. Just came up completely empty in the stretch. But a good performance by Mr. Dumas from Joe Rocco. Was coming off a nice win at Churchill on the turf. Had started the career with 3 starts on the dirt. Had 1 start as a 2-year-old and then laid off until summertime at Ellis Park. Ran third in that first start, third in the Ellis start, and then broke the maiden in the 3rd career start. Again at Ellis Park, again on the dirt, those first 3 starts. Then over to Kentucky Downs, tried the turf, ran a decent 3rd, an allowance event, followed that up with an allowance win at Churchill back at the end of September, and then gets placed in this, and only the 6th career start. So this is going to be a nice little older turf runner. Only 6 starts, 3 wins now on the turf, including a nice grade 3 event. Mr. Dumas gets it done. Tracksmith was a Joe Sharp runner coming out of a second place finish in the Jefferson Cup back in that September meet at Churchill Downs. Okay, second. Got up and, what, half a length behind, but a length and a quarter in front of the 3rd place finisher. Spectacular Gem, who, in fact, had finished in front of Tracksmith in the Jefferson Cup, was in the race yesterday as well. Spectacular Gem went off at 6-1. Interesting that Tracksmith, having finished behind Spectacular Gem, went off as the 7-2 favorite. Spectacular Gem went off at 6-1, but the betting public had it right as Spectacular Gem finishes 5th in there off of the stakes win just prior in the Jefferson Cup. But Mr. Dumas, as I say, fairly lightly raced as a 3-year-old, the end of the 3-year-old season. Interesting. And I wonder if they would consider Hollywood Derby. Do they still have enough time? I mean, it's Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah, it's maybe a little too close. But Mr. Dumas, regardless, will be interesting to watch going forward. Speaking of watching going forward, as I said at the top of the show, the stake at Woodbine, the Frost King, restricted, $100,000 up for grabs, but restricted to Ontario Stallions or Ontario Breds, 7 furlongs, $100,000. This is a race that could produce potentially Queen's Plate runners next year. Field of 9 went. Owlette had been in the field. That one scratched. I liked Artie's Princess. So did the betting public. Went off as the even money favorite. Artie's Princess will be the number 6. It's a Wesley Ward runner for Ken and Sarah Ramsey. Had been 2-for-2 already in the career, both at Woodbine. The number 6, you can see, is fighting on the outside, but Dotted Line just will not let the favorite get by. Dotted Line 49-1 and just won't let the favorite get by, and gets it done at $100.40. Dotted Line shouldn't have been the price. 15-1 on the morning line and was coming out of a win. Now, not a horse you would have landed on, deserved to be a little bit of a price, but 3 starts, 3 improving finishes. The last was a lifetime best buyer, so each start, again, getting better. The number may be a little bit light, certainly light as compared to the favorite. So the horse was probably going to have to step it up to beat the favorite. Forrester's Turn, who was a little bit disappointing as the second choice, no, the 3rd choice, actually. Also had a better number last time. Rock Crest had some better numbers. So again, Dotted Line was probably going to have to step it up. But given that improving pattern, that was possible. Again, the knock on this horse was the maiden breaker, and all 3 of the starts were in maiden optional claimers. So was going against maybe a little bit lighter, was stepping it up competition-wise on Saturday. But again, coming out of a win, and a decent little win last time. Had gone a mile and a 16th in the last start, and I was cutting back to this 7-furlong, one-turn trip. So Dotted Line had some things you could have found interesting, particularly if you thought, and I'm red-boarding because I didn't use the horse, but this is the kind where you kind of reverse engineer a little bit, maybe next time. But it's the kind where you look and you say, yeah, okay, the horse is a little bit live, and, I'm not a track that I don't necessarily have the horse in my mix, but if you look up at the tote board and you see 50-1 and you say, you know what, this is not a 50-1 shot. The horse was 15-1 on the morning line. That was probably more like it. 15, 18, 20-1, something like that was probably a little more palatable for proper odds. So that was one where you look up and you say, I can wind up with $100 on a horse that has some potential to be in the mix. Comes off a win, nice little win. Numbers maybe a little bit light, but so again, these are the kind that, as I say, you just tuck away, do a little reverse engineering. And it's the situation where it's happened to me a couple times at Saratoga in particular. You're sitting watching the horses kind of warm up. And it's happened to me after I place bets. I look at the PPs and you kind of then look up at the board. I remember there's a horse, Julien Le Perrot, was riding years ago. I think it may have been his first summer at Saratoga. And I want to say it was a Patrick Biancon horse. And I looked down and looked up, and the horse was 50-1. It paid over $100. I don't remember the, but I thought, I'm going to run back and put a few bucks on this. And the horse came in at, the $100 mutual. So it's one of those that a little bit of handicapping, but the handicapping straight up, you wouldn't necessarily make the bet on the horse, but a little bit of handicapping, a little bit of tote board watching, and you say, those odds are just skewed a little too far in one direction. Let me put a couple of bucks just to back up. And you don't have to hit too many of those because it's not going to happen all the time. So you don't have to hit too many of those to make it worthwhile to take those kind of shots. When you get $100 mutual, you could be wrong another, 49? Times, and you're still okay. You know, it doesn't happen that often that you're going to be wrong 49 more times. But again, nice win for Dotted Line, and the potential is there. As I say, Dotted Line, the Kenneth Sarah Ramsey horse for Wesley Ward, Artie's Princess. Potentially, they're both Ontario breds. Queen's Plate, maybe. But you can tuck it in your back pocket. This being a sprint, we'll see what they decide to do next year. Also interesting that Artie's Princess, Nick Juarez. Wesley Ward reached out to Nick Juarez, who we have liked for a few seasons, riding down in Florida and the Mid-Atlantic region at some point. But Artie's Princess, ridden by Nick Juarez. And I wonder if maybe now Wesley Ward thinks, Patrick Husbands did okay in the first two starts. Maybe I shouldn't have reached down. But I think it was more guts from Dotted Line than any mistake from Nick Juarez on Artie's Princess. All right, that takes us through stakes recaps on kind of a light day stakes-wise, admittedly, here in North America, the week after the Breeders' Cup. But that puts some of them in the books, as I say, with some interesting horses to watch moving forward as well. We'll take a break when we come back, do a little handicapping for this Saturday afternoon. A little bit later, Tim Wilkin will join us. He was out in Santa Anita last Friday and Saturday, so we'll get some firsthand thoughts on the Breeders' Cup, all coming up as Racing Across America continues.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vanflix Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. We'll do a little handicapping now, and I will say I pulled up Andy Serling's Twitter feed. I wanted to make sure we were on the turf, and it is fast and firm, and Serling also has up the scratches for Sunday. So I just went through the my late pick five mix here. I lost one horse in the sequence, but again, if you want to find the scratches, you can check the Nairo site. Maybe they're up there already, but if they aren't, Andy has on his Twitter feed. Also, he retweeted out something from the New York Thoroughbred Breeders. Their Twitter feed has video this morning, some good-looking video this morning of Tis the Law working out down at Belmont. Tis the Law, again, the Jack Knowlton Sacatoga two-year-old aiming for the Kentucky Jockey Club with potentially, you would think, an Eclipse Award maybe sitting out there with a win down at Churchill in that race, but put in a nice little workout. The tweet went up about an hour ago. Nice little workout down at Belmont. Serling also tweeted buyer figures for yesterday. Seguero Road had an 88. Curlin's Honor, nice 100. Jack and Noah, 83 in the stakes action yesterday down at Aqueduct. All right, I'll take you through the some ideas in that late pick five sequence today at Belmont. Starts out in race number six, state bred maiden specials, 6.5 furlongs. Our friend Steve Bick has a second time starter in here, Voltarine. I had that one in my mix. Didn't show a whole lot in the career debut, and I haven't talked to Steve about this horse, but there's a little bit of breeding there. I put Voltarine in the mix. I have a 10, 6, 11, and 9 in race six at Aqueduct. I'm going to try New York Supreme, first-time starter by Constitution. Constitution this year, 53 first-time starters, 13 wins, 5 seconds, 10 thirds. Really good numbers. Dan produced a sibling called She Takes Charge, first in the career debut, then a third, then another win. So two wins in the first three career starts. Gary Contessa, he can get first out winners, isn't necessarily known for it, but boy, the bullet work leading into this maybe tips their hand. This horse worked 21.1 before the Ocala sale. Again, a good workout leading into this, some nice breeding. New York Supreme, very interesting to me in that sixth at Aqueduct. Maya Wea in the second spot. Pletcher Runner is logically going to take some action off the second career start up at Saratoga. Also, another one with a good workout leading into this. And then I will use Voltarine underneath. Again, goes out for the DT Stables moniker of our friend Steve Bick. Didn't knock it out of the park in the career debut, but by arch, to me, that is a kind of a sneaky type of win early sire. So we'll look for this one to maybe benefit from the education garnered in the debut. In the sixth at Aqueduct, 10, 6, 11, and 9. Second leg of that late pick five down at Aqueduct, and also the race that kicks off the late pick four. It's an allowance non-winners of one other than at the one-turn mile. I have it 7, 1, 3, and 5. Network Effect, and this is an interesting race because of the return of the two Chad runners, Network Effect and Aurelius Maximus. Network Effect is a Klarovich runner that started the career Saratoga last year, won the career debut, then second in the Nashua behind Vekoma, and second in the Remsen behind Maximus Mischief, and has been on the sidelines since. So clearly There was a ding, a problem, but this is the return. I'm going to put that one on top. I just think this horse showed so much talent early in the career. The question mark will obviously be the fitness off the long layoff. But I have a feeling that the horse will be ready to run. Air Touch, interesting, also being a lightly raced four-year-old now at this point, having debuted at Saratoga in 2017, just missed in that career debut, came back at the end of Saratoga this year, so sat off for 2 years, won the comeback race, then tried Allowance Company last time down at Keeneland and was an okay second in that. So a horse that, again, had it like the top pick, a long layoff, but this one has already come back and shown a little bit of ability. So Air Touch gets in the mix. Aurelius Maximus hasn't been seen in over a year since the Champagne last year. Another one for Chad Brown. This one for Stone Street and George Bolton. Third in the career debut at Saratoga last year. Followed up at Belmont, breaking the maiden pretty convincingly, and then tried the Champagne. Ran fourth behind Complexity and Code of Honor and Code Call Paul. So again, like the top pick, has shown plenty of ability. The top pick, again, the question mark on both of these is the fitness off the layoff. The top pick, the workouts are okay. Aurelius Maximus, nice 59 and change workout just about a week ago, seems to indicate that one will be on its toes for the return. But this race is interesting because of the two Chad Brown runners that are returning off of long layoffs, having shown a nice amount of ability and talent and promise earlier in their career. So the seventh at Aqueduct, 7-1, 3-5. Eighth race is stakes competition. It's a New York Stallion Series race, 7 furlongs, the trip for the fillies and mares. I have it 9, 10, 5, and 3. Fair Regis on top. Irod Ortiz on board for Jason Service, Michael Dubman Company. Nice win, two back in Open Allowance Company. Tried the Iroquois State Bred Stakes race last time. Ran an okay second behind Pause for the Cause. I think the numbers are moving in the right direction. Seems to indicate form cycle is progressing to a point where Fair Regis may just be primed for a good effort this afternoon. Our Supernova in the second spot. This is the kind of I'm never quite sure what to do with, because the last number, it was a lifetime best buyer number, and it was just kind of a move forward that was a little bit of an aberration. And whenever that happens one way or the other, the number gets really good or the number goes backwards, you're never quite sure that the horse really just catch on and it has gotten very good right now, or gone in the other direction, or is the number really an aberration? And maybe the number's wrong, or maybe the horse just kind of freaked to go with whatever the competition was that day. I'm going to hope that this one is moving in the right direction, and it seems like that's possible given the race two back, the nice win two back. I think perhaps our Supernova, that number is legitimate, and it's just gotten to that level right now. Third spot, we'll use My Roxy Girl. Again, nice improving numbers. Good win against open starter allowance types last time with Manny Franco on board for Linda Rice. I think this one also, really like the top two, I think this one also is just in a place where moving forward and primed for another good effort this afternoon. So in race eight, the New York Stallion Series event, I have it 9, 10, 5, and 3. More stakes action in race number 9, leg number 4 of that late pick 5 at Aqueduct. This is the Stewart Manor. $100,000 up for grabs for 2-year-old fillies going 3/4 of a mile on the grass. I have a 10, 3, and 5. And again, in this race, of the I had used the 2 scratch. The 2, the 7, the 12, and the 13 are listed on Sterling's Twitter as being out of the 9th this afternoon. I had used the 2 down at the bottom of my mix, so it really doesn't affect. I'm not moving up. The 2 was in the last spot. I have a 10, 3, and 5. Miss J. McKay. And I'm just looking. Yeah, Maryland bred. There you go. You would have to think an homage to Jim McKay, you would have to think. But this horse, 3 for 3 so far, coming under the wire tried the Colleen stakes race at Monmouth in only the second start of the career, won pretty convincingly, but was disqualified from that race. So two official wins, but all three of the starts so far have been first under the wire, and first under the wire pretty convincingly. 7-2 on the morning line. I'll be interested to see what the odds are, because again, you know, we talked about it with the dotted line victory. Lightly raced two-year-olds, they all have the opportunity to move in one direction or the other direction. But Miss J. McKay just looks to, each number was going forward nicely. I mean, this horse looks like the real deal. Does stretch out a little bit today, so there are some things that maybe if you want to take a shot against, but why would you take a shot against if that morning line holds up? Get 7-2 on a horse like this. Mr. J. McKay on top. Second slot will go with Lucretia. Goes out for Arnaud Delacour off a nice win at Keeneland. And again, with a number that's comparable with Miss J. McKay last time. And that race at Keeneland was a move from dirt to turf in career start number two. So seemed to appreciate the move to the grassy surface. And Enola Gay in the third spot. The Shug McGahee runner, number-wise, may have to step up a little bit. But this horse has only had one start. And Shug said, you know what? Why don't we debut with this one down at Kentucky Downs? Try a maiden special weight event for $132,000. So this horse, one win on the resume, and it was a maiden race, and there's $78,000 in the bank already. As I say, the number may be a little bit light, but I'm thinking this horse has plenty of potential to move forward and be competitive with some of the others in here. So a fun two-year-old race in race number 9 at Aqueduct, the Stewart Manor. I have it 10-3-5. And we'll wrap up the pick five, the late pick five at Aqueduct this afternoon. Maiden 40 claimers going a mile and 16th on the grass in race number 10. I have it 7-9-2-10. Sandy Lane Kitten on top for Mike Trombetta. Dropped to this 40 level, returned to this 40 level last time and ran third. The horse was actually claimed up at Saratoga for $40,000 in the third career start. Subsequently, they tried a couple of maiden special events, and the horse was a little bit lackluster, but dropping down to 40 last time. Pretty good third-place finish. All of the numbers, or the vast majority of the numbers fired so far, stack up very nicely with this group. So we'll tilt in that direction with not a lot of confidence. I think the four I'm using all are pretty similar talent-wise. And then there are maybe a couple others that you could even look at. The firster from Christophe Clement, Fody for Phil Serpy, maybe. But again, will you see Indy Lane Kitten on top? Oh, and Pallas Athene. I didn't use the John Terranova runner, who also could be a little bit live. So I think it's a competitive race to end the sequence. But again, Sandy Lane Kitten on top, looking at roses underneath. Started the career in the Chad Brown barn for owner Ken and Sarah Ramsey. Subsequently moved into the Danny Gargan barn. First two were in maiden special company. Last time, maiden 75 claimers. Last time, well beaten against those 75 claimers. But two back up at Saratoga, showed some good speed, ran a really good number, a number that would win this race. So maybe dropping to the 40 level. We'll get a little bit of a rebound with Irod Ortiz on board. And Monkey See, Monkey Do goes out for Chad Brown off a just miss at this level last time, so should fit with this group as well. The 10th and final at Aqueduct this afternoon, wrapping up that late pick five sequence, 7-9-2-10. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Tim Wilkin. Again, he was sitting in the press box last Friday and Saturday for the Breeders' Cup, so we'll get a little firsthand account on some of the Breeders' Cup action. All of that up next. Stay tuned. Racing Across America will continue.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of ranch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, our friend Tim Wilkin from the Times Union. We face off with the Times Union guys throughout the Saratoga meet and see Tim every day up in the press box at Saratoga. And he was in the press box out in Southern California last weekend, so I thought we'd get a firsthand account. Tim, good morning.
Hey, Seth. How are you?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. Before we talk racing specifically, I just want to get a little overview. I went to your Twitter feed and pulled up a nice shot you had labeled, "This is my view for the next 2 days." So this is what you put on last Friday, looking out of the press box at the mountains and whatnot. Just give folks, we've talked to a couple other people who have been out there this past week, but just give us your impressions of Santa Anita as a venue.
You know, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's people have asked me all the time, the best place I've ever been for a racetrack, and they always expect me to say Saratoga. And God, don't get me wrong, I love Saratoga, but you just, if I had to say which track is my favorite to go to, it's Santa Anita without a doubt, because of the weather for one thing, and the San Gabriel Mountains, an excellent backdrop. Then Clocker's Corner is just a unique place where everybody gathers to watch the horses work and have their breakfast. And you know, it's just a spectacular setting for racing, and if you've never been there, you got to go, and I would tell all your viewers that, too. I mean, it is just a really, really neat place. As far as the backstretch goes, I'll take Saratoga over any backstretch in the world, I think, because, you know, at Santa Anita, it's a little cramped, and there's not a lot of grass, but it's really kind of cool. What you can see out there, I mean, the day, 2 days before the Breeders' Cup Classic, I was at Bob Baffert's barn, and, you know, he had McKenzie in the Classic, and that, of course, was named for his good friend Brad McKenzie, who passed a couple of years back, and it was such a cool story that it might have been NBC doing it. They had Brad McKenzie's mother out to the barn. She was in a wheelchair, and they went up to the horse, and it was really an emotional scene for everybody, but it was just a cool thing. I thought it was well done, and it meant the world to that woman to be up close to the horse that named for her son.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting story, and you see it when Baffert gets interviewed. When I had him on at Saratoga, we mentioned McKenzie, you can see him start to choke up a little bit. And so, yeah it's an emotional story, certainly. Ran second, but he's been kind of stuck in that mode. But we'll get to that in a second. I want to go back, talk a little bit about Clocker's Corner, because that's something that whenever you talk to people, and I think just reading about Santa Anita, you read a lot about Clocker's Corner. But talk about the atmosphere there and what that's all about in the morning.
Well, it seems that a lot of the trainers come out there to watch the horses work, and there's a whole bunch of tables there, and there's a breakfast area where you can buy your breakfast there, and you know, just, I mean, it's just different. It's an area where everybody congregates and watch the horses. It's located probably, I don't know, maybe around the 8th hole, but it's just a very congested area, but it's a good, fun area because everyone's there. And, you know, it's they got the big sign on there that says Clocker's Corners, which has probably been sitting there forever. And it's just a spit's throw from a barn. I forget who has the barn now, but there's a sign there that says this was the home of Seabiscuit when he was out there. It's just a very, very unique setting. You don't see that at any other racetrack.
Yeah, I had Dan Smith on from Del Mar yesterday because they opened this weekend, and I said to him, I'd love to get out to Del Mar, but I want to get to Santa Anita too, because everybody says just what you said. You got to get there, and it's scenic, and it's just a great venue. Another thing I'm curious about before we get to the races specifically, because you were in the press box over the weekend. You've been to other Breeders' Cups, and I've bounced around press boxes, obviously, over the past few years, and it depends on the day, the venue, the event, but a lot of press boxes now, you're looking at you and five other people, or however it works out. Belmont, for Belmont Stakes, they'll bring in some extra tables, and that usually does pretty well. So again, it all depends on the event and whatnot. I'm just wondering, because you've been to a number of Breeders' Cups, Breeders' Cup 2019, what was the press box like?
It was full.
Okay,
it was,
good.
They had, but as far as daily newspapers, the only daily newspapers from around the country that were there were me, Buffalo, Gene Kirshner was there from the Buffalo News, Tim Sullivan was there from the Louisville Courier Journal, and that's about it. I mean, it was a lot of daily racing form people, a lot of blood horse people, but every seat in there was full. And they also had an auxiliary press box downstairs for the overflow, and there was a lot of foreign journalists there. And actually, I think the foreign journalists may have outnumbered the U.S., which is sort of a sad commentary.
Well, I started thinking the other day, I don't know what got me thinking about it, but we have lost the columnists. You know, when I started to do Equidaily, I could go out and find Mike Veach in the Saratogan and Jenny Reese down in the Courier Journal, Gary West down in Texas. There was a regular writer out in Chicago. I'd regularly find some folks in the L.A. papers. And, you know, you get back to the days when I first got into the game, Russ Harris in the Daily News had a column probably twice a week. And we've lost virtually all of those people.
Yeah, we have. I mean, I think a lot of it is the way the business is now. I mean, the size of staffs have shrunk so much that you don't have, you know, just people that are covering just racing. And oh, I forgot to mention that the L.A. papers were all there, and also the San Diego paper was there, but you would expect that. But back to your point, it is kind of sad that the new regime of management in sports editors don't consider racing as important as their predecessors did. And that's sort of alarming and sad to me.
Yeah, it is a clear difference that wasn't that long ago. But let's get to happier thoughts and go back to what was a couple of good days of racing. Now, unfortunately, and we certainly have to mention Mongolian Groom, and I'm just wondering, after two nice days of racing, what in the press box was the thought, you know, when Mongolian Groom unfortunately suffered the breakdown? We have to mention that, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I was down trackside for that race, and, you know, that horse, it was just two different gamuts of emotions, because here you had the Vino Rosso people celebrating big time in the winner's circle area, and the Rapoli, Mike Rapoli, one of the owners, had his whole crew there. He must have had 50, 60 people, and it was really loud and raucous, and, you know, you go an eighth of a mile up the track, and there's this poor horse struggling to stand. I mean, it was so sad, because they were an eighth of a mile from getting through the whole Breeders' Cup without any kind of an incident. But I'm not going to blame this on the track, I don't think. I mean, it was a left hind injury, and you don't usually blame a track surface on that. I think he might have stepped in a hole, or he might have had an undetected injury, even though the vets out there went over every single horse with a fine comb. I mean, there were horses that were scratched the day of the races. Imperial Inn comes to mind. He was scratched Saturday morning because he had a blister. I mean, Louis Carbajal golfed that he wasn't able to run because he thought he was fine, but it was a blister, and they were going to err on the side of caution. I think there were maybe six horses that the vet scratched over the 2 days, you know, on race day. And they did their due diligence. I give them that. I think that the Mongolian Groom situation, it was just unfortunate. And, you know, and again, the horse had won a race there a month ago when he won the Awesome again. And I saw the horse 2 days before the race. He was out walking. Granted, I'm not a vet and I'm not an expert in thinking, but he looked fine to me. And I just think it was something that it was just an unfortunate situation that happened. And you really feel for the connections of Mongolian Groom.
Yeah.
And remember, he was at Saratoga this summer, too.
And as you say, there was an overabundance of caution. The surface itself, there was plenty of comment on that, and that they had added cushion. And so it was just a little bit unfortunate in that, the rest of the weekend just went well. And let's touch on some of that. Want to go back and show the stretch run to the Breeders' Cup turf, Bricks and Mortar, the number 9 horse here. And I'm curious, up in the press box, was there buzz, or is it just there's too much in the moment and deadlines for people to kind of look out like this? But I'm wondering, was there buzz potentially on after Bricks and Mortar gets it done? Again, the number 9 horse here on the outside. And given what happened the rest of the weekend, were people talking horse of the year for Bricks and Mortar?
As soon as he crossed the finish line. I mean, that horse just gets it done. I mean, this is, you know, Chad Brown did a great job with him. I mean, he's going a mile and a half for the first time, and he just has a will to find the finish line. I mean, he's just that good, and I think that, you know, I he'll probably get my vote for Horse of the Year. But one thing that sort of surprised me a little bit, Seth, was that in the final NTRA poll, Bricks and Mortar's got, I think, 42 votes, and Matoli, who more than just a candidate for Horse of the Year, only got 2. I mean, I was really surprised at the differential in votes for the final NTRA poll. I mean, I think that I think Bricks and Mortar, you know, how can you argue that he's undefeated this year? And I know some people that vote maybe don't like giving Horse of the Year to Turf Horse, but Wise Dan won it twice. But I just think he's got to win it after what happened to, you know, Midnight Sue and others. So I think that Bricks and Mortars will win the Horse of the Year, and I think it'll be a comfortable margin.
Yeah, I think so, too. I want to go back, though, and take a look at another horse you did mention and look at the Breeders' Cup Sprint, because I've liked Matoli all year long. And I'll ask you, the press box again, was there as much anticipation for this Breeders' Cup Sprint? Because it seems like in the week and a half leading up, this was the race that almost was overshadowing the Classic as far as anticipation. And I think it lived up to it. We're watching the stretch run here, and number 4, Matoli, will get it done over number 6, Chancelot. Number 7, Whitmore, winds up 3rd in here. This was just, again, Matoli, a monster. It was, for me, the most anticipated race on the card. And as I say, I'm wondering if that was kind of what you felt in the press box and the facility as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of people were really looking forward to that race. It lost a little bit when Imperial Hint went out. But, you know, how can you not, you know, stand up and applaud for a horse like Matoli? I mean, he's done nothing wrong all year. The only loss he had was at Saratoga on the day that the rail was dead, and that was his only loss. And he's taken his game to, what, is it, 5-6 different tracks this year and won at all of them. He's just a very solid racehorse, and I don't think the people that are connected with him have anything to hang their heads about if they don't get Horse of the Year, because, you know, he did everything he was supposed to do. But unfortunately, Bricks and Mortars probably has a little bit of a better resume.
Let's hit on some of the other notes. We talked a little bit about the classic insofar as McKenzie running second. It was Vino Rosso getting it done over McKenzie. You had a shot on your Twitter feed of Bob Baffert talking to Joel Rosario after the race, and you said it was a friendly conversation. And so what did you get the feeling coming out of the race, Baffert's feelings on running second again? I used McKenzie on top. I noted you had picked Vino Rosso, so good pick there. I had him underneath. I had the top two flip-flop. I thought McKenzie was the best older horse this year, and I thought maybe the number of second-place finishes was just a fluke, and the Whitney performance was more like what we would see. But, man, he is just stuck in the bridesmaid this year. He runs second again. As I say, what kind of feeling did you get from Baffert after the race?
Well, he was very proud of what his horse did. And I was talking to him in the tunnel and right before Joel Rosario came up to him. And, you know, McKenzie, after the Whitney, I mean, I think people were getting ready to, you know, stencil his name on the Horse of the Year trophy after that performance. But for some reason, he just can't win this year at Santa Anita. I mean, that's the reason that Bob sacked Mike Smith from him, because he was finishing second. I mean, maybe the most glaring one was when he couldn't run down Mongolian Groom and the Awesome again. But Vino Rosso, he just showed how much he's improved since last year. I mean, last year it was like they didn't know what they were going to get every time they sent Vino Rosso out there. I remember talking to John Velasquez, who was riding him then, and probably wishes he'd picked him over Code of Honor, at least for this race. But he said, you just never know if he's going to show up. Well, he showed up on this day, and I think that something that was really beneficial to him was when Pletcher and his team sent Vino out to Santa Anita to win the race in May. I mean, I think that helped him immensely, and he really did take to the track. And it was, you know, because of the safety issues, they really had made it like a beach almost. It was so soft, and I think that's one of the things that Chuck McGahee wasn't happy about, was that it was too deep. Maybe his horse didn't like it at all. And but you know, hats off to Vino Rosso. He proved it on that day. He was the best horse in the Classic. He hasn't done enough to get Horse of the Year. I don't even know if he'll get older Horse of the Year. But on that day, he was without question the best horse there.
You know, you mentioned Code of Honor, a disappointment. Come Dancing was disappointing. Sister Charlie and Midnight Bijou ran well, but not winning was a little bit disappointing. But I want to go back to one of the major disappointments of the weekend and go back to Friday and the two-year-old race, which just kind of blew up. Dennis's moment with the poor start. I know Dale had, and a lot of people had, high hopes. The horse was just working gangbusters. But another one that didn't get mentioned, Dennis's moment, obviously disappointing. But another horse that doesn't get mentioned is Eight Rings, I think, had a lot of potential in that juvenile. And he didn't run either. And you had talked to Bob Baffert after that. Talk a little bit about Eight Rings and Dennis's moment kind of fizzling in the juvenile.
Well, Dennis's moment, obviously, he had an excuse because he, you know, stumbled coming out of the gate and lost all hope. Eight Rings had absolutely no excuse at all. He just did not run. And that was really puzzling to Baffert, because he thought that Eight Rings was his best chance to win of the four horses I believe he had in the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, he was perplexed as to why he didn't run. But for whatever reason, he didn't. And you know, that kind of, that juvenile finish opens up the door for our friend Jack Knowlton.
Absolutely.
I think, because, you know, he goes down and wins that Kentucky Jockey Club race on November 30th. I would think he's got to be the front runner for the two-year-old Eclipse. I mean, Dennis's moment didn't have a grade one. Eight Rings did, but, you know, you win the Champagne and you go down and win this race in Kentucky. I don't know how you cannot not give him the two-year-old Eclipse, and that would be a great feather in the cap for the Sacatoga people, who, you know, they haven't played on this stage since Funnyside, and it would be a lot of fun for people to follow the races, especially in this area, to see if they can find the Lightning again in the first Saturday of May next year. Because he's going to, from Kentucky, he'll go down to Florida with Barkley, Tag String, and probably run in the Holy Bull, and then he may go to Louisiana after that and run in the Louisiana Derby, kind of the same kind of route Funnyside that he ran in that race. So, I mean, it's a lot of excitement for those people. And if he gets it done in Kentucky, I think he's going to be a two-year-old champion.
I'm with you. I think he controls his own destiny, and that Kentucky race is the key. There was the New York Thoroughbred Breeders Twitter feed tweeted out a workout for Tis the Law this morning, and he looked good over at Belmont. So we're rooting for Jack and the Sacatoga folks and Barkley and company. And speaking of New York connections, just before we let you go on the human side, New York connections, Saratoga horses did very well over the weekend. Chad Brown, Structor, Uni, and Bricks and Mortar. But winning the Shoemaker Award as the top jockey of the 2 days, Irod Ortiz, Vina Rosso, Bricks and Mortar, Spun to Run, and Four Wheel Drive. And there was a fun article from Dave Grenning the day after, I think, the Breeders' Cup, where it said Irod had gone to his agent, I guess sometime within the last week or two, and said, you know, on the top end, I'm doing okay. But I think at that point, he was ninth in the standings in New York. And so he was kind of like, but the day-to-day business maybe isn't what it should be. And the agent said, hey, you know, just see what happens at the Breeders' Cup. And so it turned out to be a pretty good Breeders' Cup for Irod.
Well, it most certainly did. And, you know, it's retribution for him after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, where, you know, he was taken down in that stretch duel with Code of Honor, the controversial decision. I mean, you talk to 10 people, you'll get 5 different responses. Some will side with Code of Honor, some will side with Vino Rosso. I mean, I think, I still don't know. I think I would not have taken Vino Rosso down, but that's conversation for another day. But, you know, yeah, Irad was over the moon with how things went that weekend, and I think he was especially, you know, happy with Vino Rosso, obviously, but I mean, I think because of what happened in the Jockey Club Gold Cup,
and also Pletcher's first Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, I think it's his first one in, I want to say, 13 tries.
Yeah,
and you know, because him, when you just going back to the Gold Cup, I was there for that day, and you were there too, I believe, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah.
And Todd is always talked win or lose. He would not talk after that race. And I guess he didn't talk the day after either, because he didn't want to say something that was going to, you know, make him look bad. But when I was talking to Todd leading up to the Breeders' Cup Classic, I asked him how long it was going to take to get over that DQ, and he said probably about 10 years. And when I asked Rapoli the same thing, told him what Todd said, goes, well, if it's going to take Todd 10 years, it's going to take me longer. Because he was in Italy when the Jockey Club Gold Cup decision came, and I remember texting him back and forth, and he was not happy.
Yeah,
but he's happy now.
Yeah, exactly. They got the one that counted at the end of the year, and so it was fun. It was fun capper to the weekend. You know, a nice weekend of racing where some Eclipse Awards, many Eclipse Awards, I think, were decided, and a couple others become the 3-year-old side as well. I think Maximum Security probably controls his destiny in the Cigar Mile.
I agree with that. I mean, if he wins the Cigar Mile, I think you got to give it to him.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that if Code of Honor has won the Classic, then I think he would have won it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Maximum Security. And I think Maximum Security winning it would be the popular decision because of what happened to him in the Derby.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he definitely controls his own destiny. But if he doesn't win the Cigar Mile, then it's blown up again.
Yeah, it becomes real. You aren't kidding, because that division just kind of becomes a head scratcher. It would go, I think, to either Maximum Security, Code of Honor, but it would be you'd have to kind of really parse it out. But that just means, as I say, some Eclipse divisions decided and some still to be decided in that Kentucky Jockey Club or the Cigar Mile. Those are a couple of races. The Malibu at the end of the year maybe could play into the 3-year-old scene, but that just means still the better part of a couple of months of good racing left. Tim, appreciate the visit as always, and we will talk again.
Sounds good, Seth. Thank you.
Tim Wilkin from the Times Union. Again, he was out at the Breeders' Cup last Friday and Saturday covering the the big event. Did so for the Times Union. You can also follow Tim's Twitter feed, TJ Wilkin, at TJ Wilkin. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America with a noontime start at Aqueduct. They're already underway with Talking Horses, so I'll wrap it quickly here. We'll remind you that it is an NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Love to see you stop down, watch all the games and all the racing action. 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Also the location for Veterans Day Match Bet promotion on the holiday tomorrow. You can swing in and take advantage of the promotion and watch all the racing action. Aqueduct underway is one of the venues that will be racing on the Monday holiday. And because of that, we will also have a special OTB Live tomorrow here on the network. I will be back for OTB Live this Sunday afternoon, probably about 45 minutes or so. We'll jump in with a noontime post at Aqueduct. So plenty of great racing action still to come this afternoon. Thanks for tuning in this morning. As always, we'll see you in a few.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.